Chapter 12. Over the next few hours, my women and I brought down the unconscious aristocrats, placed them into the empty cells, and carried the crates down into the laboratory. We had about 8 nobles to transform over the next few hours, but since we already had the beasts on hand, it wouldn't take as long as usual. After we loaded everything down into the laboratory, I moved toward the cabinets and rummaged through one of the drawers.
"Charles,"
Ryan boomed.
"What are you doing, my love?"
"Looking for a needle, tubing, and a small container," I uttered over my shoulder. "We need my blood for the experiment, but I can't keep breaking the skin between my thumb and pointer finger. It'll never heal. It'll be much easier if I have a test tube of my blood and use it for the experiments, rather than tearing open the same wound repeatedly."
"What should we do, Charles?"
Cleia asked. "You and Ryan should bring over one of the aristocrats," I instructed. "Daisy, Valerie, will you unload one of the beasts into Compartment A?"
"Yes, Charles."
The bear girl nodded, turned, and moved her eyes over the massive pile of crates.
"We have plenty of them to choose from."
"Let me pick!"
Valerie sang.
"Let me pick! I choose... this one!"
The feline woman stood on her tiptoes, ran her fingers over the metal surfaces of the boxes, and then tapped a particular box with her pointer finger. The ash blonde grabbed it and held it tightly to her chest as she skipped over toward Compartment A. Daisy trailed after her and grabbed a pair of gloves from a side table as a precaution.
"Hey, Ryan! Josephine! This box has a big blue V on it. Do you know what that means?"
"Oh, yes."
The heiress nodded and scrambled to grab a clipboard from atop another of the boxes.
"All of the crates are labeled with the first letter of the beast's name. You said that's box V. That's a... oh, here it is. Yes, that's a vulpes. I've never heard of that before."
"Really?"
Daisy gasped excitedly.
"It's a vulpes? Oh, this is so exciting."
"What's a vulpes?"
the feline woman asked and scrunched up her nose.
"It's something like a hybrid of a fox, cat, and bunny. I read all about them in the books that Charles gave me. They're typically unusual colors, very mischievous, and mildly powerful."
"What kind of powers do they possess?"
The ash blonde probed, scratched at an ear, and lifted the crate's lid to get a peek.
"Well, actually, it depends. There are 4 different species of the vulpes. There's the northern spotted vulpes, the eastern snow vulpes, the western striped vulpes, and the rare southern chameleon vulpes. The one that's most common around here is the spotted vulpes, but there have been a few of the striped vulpes found in the higher parts of the mountains."
"Well, let's open the box and find out! Oh, this is so exciting! I wonder what other types of beasts are on the lists."
"Looks like there's a box somewhere in here labeled P. It's a papillon. What is that?"
"Oh, that's a type of mythical butterfly. The wings are coated in a special type of dust, and when it flaps them, the dust puts any creature or beast instantly to sleep. It's also rumored that they can sing, and their songs lull passing humans into a deep slumber."
"Oh, my goodness! I've never heard of such a thing."
"They're pretty common in this area, though you have to go pretty far into the woods to find their intricately built nests. Their wings are such beautiful colors, pastel pinks, baby blues, light corals, and creamy whites. I read that if you look deeply into their wide bug eyes, it looks like you're looking up at the night sky filled with sparkling stars."
"I thought you hated bugs, Daisy,"
Ryan cackled.
"You screamed so loud the other night when you saw a spider in the bathtub."
"Spiders are disgusting creatures. There's nothing special about them, unlike these beautiful specimens. Sure, spiders can weave complicated webs and catch their dinners, but can they lull their prey to sleep with naturally made dust or sing them into a trance? No way. That's why these creatures are far superior to spiders and other average insects."
"Man, I guess it's a good thing we don't have a spider monster girl,"
Cleia giggled.
"This whole conversation would be incredibly awkward."
"I don't think I'd want a spider as one of my women. They'd probably have far too many legs to deal with."
"Or they'd wrap you up in a silken cocoon,"
the imp woman pondered.
"Bite you, turn your insides to goop, and then suck it out with their straw-like teeth."
"Ew!"
Valerie wrinkled her nose.
Thanks for the visual, Ryan. We all wanted it.
You're welcome.
The black-haired beauty nodded, crossed her arms over her chest, and grinned.
I don't mind thinking about it, since we used to do similar things in the impdom.
Can we please get back to the Vulpes?
The brunette broke in with a giggle.
They're far more cute and cuddly than spiders.
The bear girl readjusted her glove, nodded to Valerie, and the ash blonde flipped open the lid. A soft thump came from inside the box, and everyone standing around instinctively took a step closer to see the small creature inside. The brunette's honey-colored eyes immediately lit up, and a broad smile spread over her plump lips as she reached into the metal crate.
Just as I suspected! It's a northern spotted Vulpes. And look how pretty she is!
The brunette grabbed the small creature by the scruff of its neck and slowly lifted it out for all to see. The Vulpes's little bunny-like rounded legs hung limply in the air while its long fox-like tail swung out wildly behind it. Its long bunny-like fur was long and shaggy, but the color was so different than that of an average rabbit. All of its long, soft-looking hair was a light teal, while its underbelly and a swatch between its ears were a darker indigo color. The Vulpes's face was more kitten-like than fox or bunny-like. Its nose was nearly flat and pressed against its face, while its luminescent eyes were huge and a seafoam green. Round sky-blue ridges created a small line from the middle of its forehead all the way down to the tip of its pink nose. The tiny creature gazed around the room with terror in its eyes and made a soft, sad squeaking sound as Daisy held it higher.
It's so cute!
Josephine cried.
Oh, my goodness! It looks just like a kitten, but also a fox and a bunny! Oh, all three of the cutest animals combined into one!
I have to hurry up and put it in the compartment. It may be cute, but it has razor-sharp teeth that are strong enough to break bones. Charles, remember when the imp bit you?
Oh, yes. I remember that. How could I forget? The very same imp who later became our fiery Ryan.
I regret nothing I ever bit. Except for Charles.
This thing's bite is 20 times worse than that.
The bear girl uttered, opened up the metal door into the compartment, and hastily put the Vulpes inside.
Since its mouth is so small, it essentially has the bite force comparable to a fully grown wolf's.
But it's such a cute little teeny tiny baby. I just want to snuggle it and give it hundreds of kisses.
I don't think it'd like that very much. Maybe once all of this settles down and we kill the queen, I'll get you a kitten or a puppy.
Oh, no puppies or kittens, Charles. We want offspring. Hundreds of children to fill the palace and populate the world with more monster women.
My eyes swiveled to each of my women, and they nodded along with the imp woman's words. Josephine's cheeks flushed red, and her orange cat-like eyes avoided my face, but she, too, nodded along with her sisters. All right. All right. I'll work on that with each of you.
Yay!
Valerie shouted and pumped her arms into the air.
We don't have to practice making babies anymore. We're gonna be making babies instead. Oh, I can't wait to see what everyone's children will look like. Oh, Cleia, your daughters will be the prettiest with your stunning turquoise hair.
Daisies are going to be short and cute and tough as hell. Valerie's are going to be curious and mischievous, just like her. Imagine how many times we're going to have to clean up the yarn once they're finished with it.
The imp woman crossed the room and opened up one of the cells where we'd placed all of the unconscious aristocrats. They'd been asleep for a few hours by now, and I figured we'd need to drug them at least 3 or 4 times more before we finally finished this task. The red-skinned imp knelt closer to the floor, grabbed one of the nobles by the dress, and hauled the comatose body over her shoulder. Ryan brought the body over to the machine, ripped open the door into compartment B, and threw the aristocrat in with a loud metallic thud. The imp woman brushed off her hands and then turned back to me with a grin. I held the needle, tubing, and container in one hand, then grabbed a tourniquet from another drawer. I wrapped the stretchy fabric around my left tricep and tapped the vein in my elbow to test it. I cleared my throat, attached the needle to the tubing, and then placed the pipe inside of the container. I plunged the needle into my skin and winced against the slight pinch as I searched around for the vein. Once I found it, I tugged the hollow needle a bit and allowed blood to flow through it. I sat there for a few minutes while the glass container slowly filled with my scarlet blood. Once it was nearly full to the brim, I grabbed a small swatch of gauze and medical tape, pulled out the needle, and placed the dressing over top the minuscule hole. I taped the gauze into place and closed the container with a sterilized seal before I tossed out the used needle and placed the tubing into the sink to be cleaned later. I held the small container of blood up to the light and stared into its murky depths for a second. This was the critical ingredient to the transformation process, wasn't it? The experiment wouldn't work without it, right? I'd tried the experiment with males before, but two of the variables were very different. Back then, we used crystals, minerals, and runes along with males to create the super soldiers. I wondered if we tried it again, but with my blood and a mythical beast, would it work, or would it turn out how all the others had before? Would another innocent man lose his life to my machine, or would I create a new life just as I had done before with my monster women? At the very least, I didn't need any monstrous man to fall madly in love with me. I pushed all of those thoughts away from me, grabbed a needle from a small side table, and drew some of my blood into the syringe. Then I crossed the room and opened up the door before I dribbled a little bit of my blood onto the shiny corrugated flooring.
"Are we ready, Charles?"
Daisy asked, as I snapped the door shut, drew another syringe full of my blood, and set it aside. "Yes, let's get started. Once we've finished with this one, I want all of us to create something like an assembly line. One of you will place the beast inside compartment A, while another one of you will place an aristocrat inside compartment B. I'll put my blood into compartment C, and when all of that's finished, someone else will throw the switch."
"I'll throw the switch, if that's all right with everyone. I'm not very strong, so I can't carry another person."
"I'll carry the unconscious bodies. I'm the strongest one here and can get it done the fastest."
"I'll do the beasties, even though I probably can't pet all of them."
"All right. Then, after that, Cleia, will you take them upstairs to the carriage Edeny provided? The coachman will take the new monster girls back to the duchy, and they'll be trained there by the soldiers."
"Wait."
Daisy breathed and furrowed her eyebrows.
"The soldiers know what we're doing?"
"Yes, Edeny told me that they've known what's going on for a little while now, and they're willing to train the new monster girls. But that was before we transformed Edeny. I'm sure that once we deal with the aristocrats and tell all of them our plans, they'll be more than willing to go along with our plans. I'm sure that once they know we want to kill the queen and give men their equality, they'll be scrambling to get their weapons and fight."
"Is that what Edeny's doing? We haven't seen her since she went back into the house, and I'm a little worried about her."
"As I said earlier, there's no reason to worry. Edeny and I will figure everything out. The aristocrats burned down the mercantile as a sign to the Duchess, and at this very moment, Edeny's upstairs writing out a new decree. As I explained, we'll send out an announcement to the nobles that Edeny will meet with them and hear their complaints. If the meeting goes south, then all of us will be there to take control."
"Charles, does this mean we finally get to kill some aristocrats?"
I breathed a heavy sigh, shook my head, and then let out a short bark of a laugh. "I'm sure Edeny wouldn't mind if we were missing one or two aristocrats from the army of monster girls," I finally relented. "But I draw the line at one or two, do you understand? If you're going to kill one of them, all of you have to team up together and do it."
"Yes!"
the black-haired beauty shouted.
"Finally!"
"But why only one or two? Charles, we've been waiting for this for so long! I think we're allowed one per sister. That's only fair, don't you think?"
"We'll decide at a later time, all right? We don't know if the meeting with the aristocrats is going to go bad or not. It most likely will, but we can't be too sure. All right, enough of that conversation. It's time to get started. Josephine, ready to throw the switch?"
"Yes, Charles."
The honey blonde nodded excitedly and reached up for the switch above her head.
"Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Electricity crackled to life. All of the bulbs above our heads flickered on with a low hum. The sound rose in our ears as blinding white light poured out of all three of the compartments, and all three of us squinted against it. I physically felt the electricity pass from the panel of buttons, rushing through the thick, snaking cables across the floor, until it finally reached my machine. The pistons at the top of the machine moved so quickly that they were blurs through the air, and snow-white steam billowed out of the valves. The blinding white light intensified until I motioned for all of my women to close their eyes. I followed suit, gritted my teeth, and waited for the transformation to be complete. No sounds came afterward except for a soft ticking from my machine, and I slowly opened my eyes. The last time I'd done this, I'd expected the room to fill with choking smoke, but just as before, the room was bright and clean. Valerie and Daisy raced forward and opened the door together. A light smoke billowed out of the metal compartment, and a tiny woman stepped out. Short, fluffy, teal cat-like ears stuck out of her deep blue hair, and a fox-like tail hung between her shapely legs. The brand-new monster woman glanced around, bit her lip, and then looked to me with a terrified expression. I stepped forward and placed my hands behind my back before I addressed her. "My name is Charles Rayburn. I created you, I love you, and you are now part of our family."
"Created?"
the Vulpes woman stammered.
"What?"
"You once were an aristocrat who lived in the city of Edenheart," I stated. "But I gave you new life. My name is Charles. I love you. I am the future king of this world, and you will be one of my many wives. We'll live long lives together in the capital and fill it to the brim with our monster children. But before all of that can happen, we have to fight and kill the queen."
"Oh, Charles,"
the Vulpes woman gasped.
"That sounds marvelous. When you said that you loved me, it was amazing. I am ready to serve you, my darling."
"Wonderful," I chuckled, turned toward Cleia, and gestured toward the stairway. "If you follow Cleia, she will get you some clothes so that you can wait in comfort for me to change your other sisters." The Vulpes woman nodded, reached for Cleia's hand, and followed the turquoise-haired beauty over to the examination table. After another 10 minutes, we finished creating all the monster women, and my new creations lazed around the room and watched me with excited and intrigued eyes. The Vulpes woman, who had just finished putting on a cream-colored dress that Cleia had given her, and gave me a shy wave when I looked over at her. I smiled back and then turned to the latest creation. It was a snake woman, and she peered into the darkened cells and batted at her curly lavender hair. I'd half expected the serpentine woman to come out with a complete slithering tail and covered in slimy scales, but I was pleasantly surprised when I gently coaxed out a woman covered in beautiful fuchsia scales on her shoulders, down her back, and in small swatches on her slender hip bones. The snake woman's face was angular with high cheekbones, a slightly pointed nose, and thick, plump lips. Her wide magenta-colored eyes looked kind and understanding, but with a wildly cunning glint, and her long, waist-length lavender hair was tightly curled and bounced every time she gazed around the room. The serpentine woman glanced over her shoulder at me, grinned, and then winked with her heavily lashed eyelid. The lavender-haired beauty turned and floated closer with long, languid steps.
"What are you looking at, Charles?"
the snake woman purred.
"See anything you like?"
"Yes, something that I want, and will have. You." Valerie giggled.
"Look at you, Charles."
I shook my head and laughed lightly under my breath before glancing around the room again. I settled my sights on the fox girl in the far corner of the room and watched as she leapt up onto the stacks of boxes and settled herself down on the highest one. The fox woman reminded me a lot of Ryan, and once she set her emerald eyes on me from inside the compartment, she cackled and pounced at me with her fluffy red and black tail wagging excitedly. This woman's hair was short, cropped a bit more than Daisy's, and was a fiery red. She was the same height as the bear girl, too, but her body was a bit more curvy and thick at the hips. The redhead giggled, and her cheeks flushed a light pink as she waved to me happily from her position.
"Hey there, handsome,"
the fox girl purred.
"Admiring your work."
The redhead stretched out over the boxes, rolled over onto her stomach, and lifted her perfect plump ass into the air. I moved my eyes over the pale, taut skin of her thighs, and then nodded with a crooked smile. "Why do you keep asking me these things? Of course I'm admiring my work. All of you are stunning creatures, and I want nothing more than to rip off your clothing and ravage you. But it'd be a shame to ruin the clothes that Cleia and Valerie just gave you." The fox girl's cheeks flamed red, and her hand snapped over her lips with an embarrassed squeak.
"What about me, Charles?"
another voice prompted.
"Do you admire me, too?"
I turned toward the speaker and settled my eyes on the gorgeous pixie girl floating a few inches off the ground. The winged woman was petite, and I was pretty sure I'd never seen a woman so small in my life. Like the Papillon woman, the pixie had a pearlescent pair of wings sprouting from her shoulder blades, and when they beat behind her shoulders, they glittered and gleamed in the overhead lights. Her face was oval-shaped with a rounded chin and soft, supple-looking cheeks. Her lips were small, pouty, and a light blush pink with a mischievous smirk permanently spread over them. "You are beautiful," I whispered to the pixie as I reached out to touch her soft cheek.
"Thank you, Charles,"
she whispered, and her green eyes fluttered at me.
"Oh, I want some attention from Charles,"
another voice called out, and I turned to see the elegant moth girl that had been my fourth creation. The papillon had huge milky white eyes and a pair of translucent, pearlescent wings hanging from her shoulders. She glanced at me as Cleia gave her a gray bodysuit similar to what Val wore, puckered her lips, and giggled lustfully as a single finger brushed at her prominent collarbones. She'd been very flirty when I had first transformed her, and she begged for exactly 3 kisses before I could send her over to Cleia to get an outfit.
"He still has 2 more of us to make,"
another voice said, and I nodded at the 5th monster girl to come out of my machine. The Servos woman laid across the examination table and playfully touched the tools on my side table. She'd come from a medium-sized box labeled C for Servos, and dark brown antlers sprouted out of her thick, auburn-colored hair. "And we only have 2 more," I said to all of my new family of beautiful women. "I will do the twins together, with just 1 monster."
"Isn't that dangerous?"
Valerie asked.
"Do you think that the machine will work with 2 aristocrats inside?"
"It will. The twins have the power of telepathy, and it's only shared with the other. If we separated them, they'd probably lose that ability. When we form our armies, they'll be beneficial to us, and I want to keep them as they are." I picked out the box to use for the young twins, and the crate was smaller in size, labeled with a scarlet P. When I picked it up, a strange squishing sound reached my ears.
"That's a polypus?"
Josephine read off the parchment and then turned toward Daisy for clarification.
"Oh."
The bear girl's nose wrinkled.
"That's strange and surprising."
"What is it? The name sounds similar to octopus, but is it?"
"It's from the same species, but octopuses don't have magical abilities like these do. They're telepathic, but it's a bit different than the girl's powers. This being can force its will on other beings, like if it encounters a delicious-looking fish, the polypus can force it into its mouth."
"That's insane. How can it do something like that?"
"Well, it's not as powerful as you think. It can only last for a few seconds, so the polypus has to work pretty fast. So,"
Cleia breathed,
"if we use this polypus on the twins, it'll augment the powers that they already have, right?" "I think so."
The bear girl grinned, took the box from me, and then flipped open the box.
"If it'll transform both of them at once. Charles, are you sure?"
"I think it'll work," I said as I looked inside the box. It was total darkness, but the soft sounds of splashing water reached my ears, so I figured there was a bowl or jar of water inside it.
"I'll get it."
Daisy reached into the murky water, searched around for a second, and then pulled out a creature that resembled an octopus, but not by much. The polypus was small, about the size of an orange, and black with bright orange spots all over its dangling, suction-cup-covered tentacles. Unlike most octopuses, this creature had a single bulbous eye that took up most of its jiggly, bell-shaped head. A low grumbling came from the polypus, and it grabbed onto Daisy's glove so hard that it nearly slipped off.
"Gross,"
Valerie giggled.
"Hurry up and put that thing into the compartment."
"It's not gross. It's fascinating. In fact, I think it's kind of cute. They're charming in nature, and I've read that some people even keep them as pets because they're so intelligent."
The bear girl swung open the door to the compartment, struggled to peel the polypus off her glove, and then set it down onto the floor. The brunette raised her head to me and nodded to signal that it was ready. I swung the lever down, and immediately my machine hummed to life. Electricity lifted into the air, and white light poured out of all of the windows. My women and I waited patiently for the transformation to finish, and when it finally did, I swung the door open and glanced inside. The smoke inside was a deep royal purple and smelled slightly salty like the ocean. I wafted it away from my face and stepped deeper into the compartment.
"Charles,"
an alluring voice called.
"Oh, Charles,"
another voice simpered. A slithering sound reached my ears, and something brushed against my pant leg. Whatever it was, slithered up my ankle, wrapped around it, and tugged me gently forward. Once the smoke cleared, I finally caught view of the two nude women sitting at my feet.
"Hello, Charles,"
the first twin grinned. I was struck by their appearances for a moment and stood in place, utterly dumbstruck. Each girl's dark purple hair shifted and moved all on its own, as if it were alive. It took me a few seconds to realize that the hair actually was alive. The hair was now thin tentacles. When their hair had laid completely flat, it looked normal. But when they shifted their heads, the tentacles wobbled, came apart, and disrupted the illusion. Along with their telepathic powers, I wondered if we could use them in a battle, and what type of damage these tentacles could do against our enemies. Their eyes were huge, bigger than any of my other monster women, and lime green. Their skin looked silky smooth, and when I reached out to touch the taller twin, it felt like my finger brushed against taffeta. Their faces were small, round with slightly pointed chins, and tiny button noses that were incredibly cute. A smattering of light brown freckles brushed against their cheeks, and their pouty lips were full and wine red. As before, their bodies were carbon copies of each other, but after the transformation, their boyish figures had changed into plump, voluptuous forms of women.
"Oh, Charles!"
The twins moaned in unison as they slunk forward and pressed themselves against me. Their soft, silky hands wandered over my chest and brushed against my exposed neck with feathery, light touches. "Welcome to the new world. Why don't you come out and get comfortable? We have a few more experiments to finish before I start the examinations."
"Examinations?"
the second twin giggled.
"Have fun! Do you put your hands all over us, or do we get to examine you, Charles?"
"I examine you, but there will be plenty of opportunities to touch each other later. Don't worry."
"How many more?"
the second twin giggled.
"I can't wait to have your hands all over me."
"A lot. Now, let's get you out of here so I can finish everything up." I led the twins out into the room, and all of my monster women gushed over their appearances. Once we finished with all of the experiments, we'd pick out their new names, examine them, and then send them back to the duchy to train. I hadn't thought about the magnitude of our army, but these women were mine, and I would never let them go.
"They're so cute!"
the feline woman cried.
"Do either of you have names that you want, or can we pick them out for you?"
The two twins glanced at each other out of their eyes, shrugged, and then grinned over to the ash blonde.
"Our old names don't suit us anymore."
the first twin chuckled.
"Can we have new ones?"
the second asked.
"Okay,"
the feline woman cried.
"That one's name is Squishy, and that one is named Jiggly."
"Val,"
Daisy giggled and shook her head.
"No way." "What about Tsukizu?"
Ryan offered.
"And Yureru? They're the rough translations of those words into the imp language, and I think they're pretty."
"The translation is pretty, but..."
"We like them."
The first twin nodded and intertwined her hand with her sister's.
"I will be Tsukizu, and my sister will be Yureru, if that's all right with everyone."
"What about the others?"
Cleia asked.
"Have you named them too?"
"We've named ourselves,"
the Volpez woman giggled.
"My name is Katerina, my sister on the table is Lydia, and my other sister is Diana. We decided on powerful names since we will be part of one of the strongest armies in the world."
Lydia, the Servos woman, laid on her stomach on the examination table, glanced over her shoulder at me, and wriggled her tight ass in the forest green dress Cleia had given her. The doe-like woman was thinner and taller than the rest, with long, shapely legs and slender hips.
"Are you going to admire me too, Charles?"
the dear woman pouted.
"I need it too, don't you think?"
"You're a masterpiece. A picture of perfection, my love."
"What about me, Charles?"
Diana, the moth woman, giggled and turned to show off her shimmering white wings and round, flawless ass in her tight pastel blue dress.
"Am I a masterpiece too?"
"Of course," I grunted and felt arousal beat angrily in my loins. "Quite a sight to behold."
"I've yet to hear compliments in my direction."
Katerina laughed as her Volpez ears twitched.
"Am I not a masterpiece or a sight to behold, Charles?"
"All of you are stunning. You're just as beautiful as your sisters, my dear. I consider myself very lucky to be the man who created you and receives your love and adoration.
Thank you, Charles.
The Volpez woman murmured, crossed her arms over her chest, and leaned against the brick wall with her hip cocked out jauntily. I already knew we'd use Rianne for Katerina's transformation, but from the way she spoke and held herself, it was obvious she'd received more than one of the proud woman's traits.
What about the other ones?
Josephine asked.
Should we name them too?
What about you three? I uttered as I turned to the newest of my monster women. Would you prefer it if you named yourselves, or do you want me to name you? The snake woman glanced over at her sisters and then shrugged with a light giggle.
Charles,
the serpentine woman breathed.
I'd love it so, so much if you named me.
Me too, Charles,
the pixie shouted.
You're our creator, so we want you to give us names.
Me three,
the fox woman cackled.
We've heard that you give out the best names, and there's nothing better than being named by your creator.
All right, all right. Give me a second. I set my sights on the stunning snake woman, and the lavender-haired serpent grinned in my direction. I squinted, stuck my tongue into the corner of my lips, and thought for a long time. I'd read a lot of books in my lifetime. Even Cleia's namesake came from a book I'd read a long time ago. And when I looked at the snake woman, I remembered another book character I admired. Vipera, I grunted. Do you like that name? If you don't, we can always find another one.
Vipera,
the snake woman echoed.
Vipera. I like it. It sounds so powerful and strong, but it seems so familiar. What is it from, Charles?
One of my favorite books. It's an ancient book, of course, from before women developed powers. It's an epic legend, actually. The main character falls in love with Vipera, but her evil stepmother locks her away into the dungeon, and the hero must save her. Vipera escapes, though. She's a strong, independent woman who aids the hero. After he saves her, they set off on many adventures together. I'll have to read it to all of you sometime.
Then I love it even more.
The serpentine woman nodded.
My name is Vipera, then.
What about me?
The fox woman shouted and rocked back and forth on the balls of her feet.
Charles, what's my name? Oh, I'm so excited.
I like her,
Ryan boomed.
I like this small, furry woman. She has a fire in her blood.
Nina!
Valerie blurted out, and then covered up her mouth with a giggle. Nina? I asked, and then gazed over at the redhead. I wasn't the one to say it, but I do like it. How do you feel about it?
Well,
the fox woman bleated.
It didn't come from you, but I do really like it. Nina. Nina. I like it. I want that one.
Nina it is. All right, now for you. I settled my sights on the pixie woman, and the petite girl tilted her head curiously. I cupped my chin for a second and then glanced toward my original monster women to see if they had any ideas. When their faces gave me nothing, I dove deep into my subconscious and thought. Sirena, I uttered under my breath, and the pixie girl immediately perked up.
What was that?
She asked. Sirena, I repeated. Do you like that?
Yes,
the pixie girl gasped.
I love it. It's so pretty. Oh,
the feline woman giggled.
Sirena, that is really pretty. I love it. Charles, you're the best at giving names.
Now that we have that out of the way, I have a few things I need to tell you.
What is it, Charles?
Nina asked. I crossed the room and stood in front of the brand new monster women with my arms crossed behind my back. You're all my monster women, I boomed. I've created you to be my companions, my wives, and the mothers of my future children. But most importantly, you're all to be my soldiers when we finally attack the queen. We must fight against her and kill her. But along the way, I will make your lives bountiful and filled with love. Once this war is over, we will be fruitful and fill this land with my offspring. We're going to make this world stronger than it has ever been before, and once everything is over, we'll love in peace. But first, we must take you to Edenie's duchy and train you for battle. Do you understand?
Yes, Charles.
Katerina nodded.
We understand, and we're ready and willing to fight by your side. We all love you so much. Don't we, girls?
All eight of my brand new monster women rushed forward and embraced me tightly. Their lips found mine in a heated display of affection, and their hands wandered over my body. I grunted against their mouths and felt waves of arousal wash over me. I hastily pulled away from their arms, chuckled, and shook my head for a moment. "There will be plenty of time for that later," I assured them. "Now we need to get down to business. If you'll follow Cleia, she'll take you out to the carriage, and that will bring you to the duchy to train."
"Thank you, Charles."
One of the Polypus girls giggled and grabbed at my hand.
"We'll do whatever you ask us to do."
Cleia grinned and gestured the group of eight women out the door and up the staircase. As they disappeared, Valerie grabbed onto my arm and jumped up and down excitedly.
"Charles! That was so much fun! It was a lot of hard work, but imagine how much easier it will be when we have the elemental core of a beast. It'll take us minutes, maybe even seconds, to transform a new monster girl."
"I have to admit, it was fascinating. Charles, will these women be part of our family?"
"Of course. They'll be a part of our family just as all of you are. Think of yourselves as my first wives, but they will belong to me too, and our family will grow exponentially."
"Yay! This is great. I'm going to have so many new sisters. I love it."
"Yeah,"
Cleia sighed.
"I love all these new sisters, but I'm a bit sad they can't stay here with us. I understand why they need to get trained, but I want a new sister that gets to live with us here."
"You do have a new one," I chuckled.
"What?"
Ryan wrinkled her nose.
"What do you mean?"
"You have a new sister. She simply hasn't been transformed yet." I turned, stepped toward Josephine, and offered her my hand. The honey blonde's mouth fell open, and her orange cat-like eyes widened out of surprise.
"Charles, do you really mean it? I get to be a monster girl after all this time?"
"Yes, my love. I finally decided that it's your turn."
"Oh, Charles!"
the honey blonde cried and threw her arms around me.
"When can we do it?"
"I'm thinking shortly after we deal with the aristocrats. But I was so excited to tell you that I couldn't stop myself. You're finally going to get your wish, Josephine. And I'm the one who gets to give it to you."
"Oh, congratulations, Josie! Oh, this is so exciting! We get a new sister, and Josephine finally gets her wish! Thank you, Charles!"
The heiress bleated and wrapped her arms around me a little tighter.
"Thank you so much!"
A soft clapping came from the stairwell, and all of us turned to see Edeny standing in the doorway. The she-wolf grinned excitedly and then bowed her head to Josephine.
"I'm so excited for you, Josie,"
the Duchess admitted.
"And I wanted to take this time to apologize for my actions formally."
"What?"
the heiress squeaked.
"What do you mean, Edeny?"
"The night that we went to the black market to buy a harlot, I prevented you from going through the transformation. You wanted it so badly, and I saw it in your eyes, but I couldn't allow you to do it because of my horrible selfishness. Charles may be the only one who can transform you, but I want this to be my gift to you. An apology, if you will, for all of the horrible things I've done to you and your family in the past."
"No, Edeny, it's fine."
Josephine shook her head.
"I forgave you for all those things. There's no need to apologize. You're my sister now, and I love you with all of my heart."
"Then, as my sister, accept my apology."
"All right."
The honey blonde bowed her head.
"I'll give in, but only this time. The past is the past, and I love you for who you are, Edeny. You're my sister, just as Valerie, Cleia, Daisy, and Ryan are."
"Edeny, what are you doing down here? I thought you were busy writing out an announcement."
"I was, but I finished and sent it off with my courier. By tomorrow morning, the town criers will have it in their hands, and all of Edenheart will know of our scheduled meeting."
I turned toward the rest of my monster women and gave them a tender smile before I opened my mouth to speak. "I want all of you to get a good night's rest. We have no idea what the aristocrats will do tomorrow at the meeting, but I need all of you to be prepared and ready to attack. We don't know if that's what they're going to do yet, but we need to be on our toes the entire time."
"But, Charles! You said that all of us are coming to the meeting. How? I thought that the aristocrats couldn't see Valerie, Ryan, and Cleia under any circumstances."
"They won't. We'll have them wear the same type of robes that Edeny will be. Before anyone can ask the question, the meeting will be at the Hall of Justice in town and will arrive before anyone gets there. That way, no aristocrat will see any of you. Does that sound all right?
Yes, Charles.
Daisy pondered for a second and then nodded.
I think that sounds reasonable.
Okay, Charles.
Valerie giggled.
That sounds fairly easy.
Cleia smiled.
But you promised that I'm allowed to kill one aristocrat.
Ryan reminded me. You can. Now, it's late. Let's head off to bed. You don't have to sleep right away, but we have to get up pretty early tomorrow. My women nodded and headed for the laboratory door, but Edeny hung back with a faraway smile. I glanced over at her with furrowed eyebrows and then began cleaning up a few of the supplies I'd left out earlier.
Charles,
the Duchess breathed. What is it, my love? I asked over my shoulder.
Ryan told me there's a hot spring pretty close to the manor.
The Duchess giggled. Yes, it's about 10 minutes from the manor on foot. But what does that have to do with anything?
Well, I overheard a conversation earlier today. I think you'd be interested in hearing what was said.
I raised my head and crooked an eyebrow at her curiously for her to go on. Edeny's plump lip puckered out, and a light blush dusted across her cheeks as she settled herself down onto the metal examination table.
You know how Valerie and Ryan are?
The wolf woman went on.
They like to tell each other what they do with you in the bedroom, in great detail.
Oh, I know. What did they say now?
No. It's not what they said, but instead who they said it to.
Oh, no. Did they scar Cleia or something?
No. In fact, the little Nick seemed pretty interested, if you catch my drift. I just think it'd be nice if you and Cleia had some special time together. You haven't gotten that yet, have you? Because of me?
No, we haven't. We've just been so busy.
I see it in her eyes, Charles. She loves you so much. She's ready, and she's waiting on you to claim her womanhood. So why don't the two of you go and try to find that hot spring? I think it'd be a nice little distraction for you.
Cleia was my second newest monster girl, and I'd barely gotten any time to spend alone with her yet. After we'd transformed her, we'd had to hide her away until after we'd changed Edeny. The Nyx woman was stunning, and the idea of spending some personal time with her at the relaxing hot spring sounded phenomenal. All right, I'll take you up on that offer.
Then I'll leave you to it.
The Duchess hopped off the examination table and headed for the stairs.
I believe Cleia wanted to grab a glass of water before bed, or at least she usually does. You might catch her if you go through the back door.
And with that, Edeny let out a soft hum and disappeared up the stairs. I hastily put away the tubing I'd used earlier and closed the drawer with a snap before I ran out of the lab. Upstairs, the soft shuffling sounds of feet told me that someone was in the kitchen, so I hurriedly snapped off the laboratory lights and then climbed the stairs two at a time. I swung the kitchen door open and slipped inside right as Cleia gasped and jumped from the unexpected sound. The Nyx woman held a delicate hand to her massive chest and breathed heavily before giving me an impish look and puckered out her lips.
Oh, Charles, don't scare me like that.
I'm sorry, I grunted, and then stepped toward the Nyx woman. Cleia?
Yes, my love?
There's something I want to show you. Come with me.
Oh, Charles, I thought you wanted us to go to bed. Everyone has gone upstairs to get ready.
Just take my hand. I want to take you somewhere. Cleia glanced down at the hand I offered her and then to the glass of water she held. The Nyx woman chuckled softly, set down the water, and then slipped her tiny hand into my own. The two of us moved from the house and hurried out and into the darkened forest beyond. I knew of the hot spring located on my property, and I'd stumbled upon it once or twice before, but I'd never gone in. When I found it the first time, I'd ventured out in the middle of winter to look for fallen trees for firewood and found the steaming hot spring entirely by accident. The few times after that, I'd simply gone back to look at the beautiful scenic area around it, but I still hadn't been brave enough to get in just in case an aristocrat wandered onto my property and saw me. It was a little bit chilly out in the forest since fall was fast approaching, but Cleia didn't seem to notice. I glanced at the Nyx woman out of the corner of my eye and admired her stunning face and beautiful, voluptuous body. She was delicious. Thick where she needed to be thick, and slender where she should be slender. "Aren't you cold?" I asked.
"No, not really."
The turquoise-haired woman shook her head.
"I don't mind it at all. Nixies usually live in the deeper parts of lakes and rivers where it's the coldest, so I don't mind the weather the way it is now. I doubt I'll even notice a difference when the winter comes."
"Cleia, do you remember your past? Not the Nix part of your memories, but anything from Kilara's?"
"I don't remember a lot. And I've already told you some of the things that came to mind. Like the Soul Eater and Kilara's relationship with the Queen. I remember some of her childhood, though. And it's painful, if I'm being entirely honest."
"Painful? Do you want to tell me about it?"
"Despite females generally being rich and successful, somehow Kilara's family was poor. I believe that her mother accumulated gambling debts that she couldn't repay, and her mother did something that no mother should ever do."
"What happened?"
"Kilara's mother sold all of her daughters to the Queen, and Kilara became the Queen's handmaid from a very young age. The Queen essentially groomed Kilara to be her lover from the beginning, and then trained her to be a spy for the capital."
"That's so horrible," I spat out. "I can't even say I'm surprised, because I already know some of the horrible things that the Queen has done to Edeni and other people."
"Kilara may have been a terrible person, but she certainly didn't deserve the life she was given. The Queen took her in, forced her to change her name, and made her work for her all the while pretending to be in love with her to take advantage of the young girl. I almost feel sorry for her, Charles. I know that I am her, but at the same time, I'm not."
"Besides Josephine, I think that Kilara is the only aristocrat I've ever felt sorry for. But she did try to kill us. She loved the Queen, and she willingly did her bidding."
"That's true. I never thought of it from that perspective, because I feel so separated from who I am and who she was. She did horrible things to the man I love and the sisters I so dearly care for. She may deserve my sympathy, but she didn't deserve mercy. Wait, Charles, what's that up ahead? Do you hear that? It sounds like running water."
Cleia's hand gripped harder onto my own, and she pulled me through the low brush toward the sounds. I knew we were pretty close to the hot spring, and once we broke through the trees, the large pool of steaming water came into view.
"Charles, is this the place you wanted to show me?"
The hot spring consisted of a wide pool of water large enough for three or four people to sit in. A small waterfall bubbled on the left side where the spring water trickled down from the mountain, and a luminescent blue light glowed underneath the surface of the water. Trees almost entirely surrounded the pool, so out here in the dark no one could see us as we bathed together. The heat in the smaller clearing reminded me of summer, and I hastily tugged at my shirt's collar for some relief. Cleia sighed softly, tilted her head, and rested her hands against the waistband of her thin, short skirt. The Nix woman's eyes met mine, and a sly smile crossed over her lips before she slowly lowered the side of her skirt.
"Charles, did you bring me out here to only show me the hot spring, or did you have other intentions?"
The turquoise-haired beauty pulled her skirt all the way down, turned away, and aimed her perfect ass in my direction. A lump immediately formed in my throat, and my flaccid penis sprung to life against the fabric of my trousers. Cleia glanced over her right shoulder at me as her hands went to the back of her top, deftly undid it, and let it fall to the forest floor. Before I could get a peek at her dazzling curves, the Nix woman stepped into the steaming water and was partially obscured by the rising steam.
"I've been thinking about this moment for a very long time, Charles."
Cleia purred, raised a hand, and gestured me in with a single finger.
"I'm finally ready to give you my virginity, Charles. I want you to have all of me. Come on in. The water's just fine, my love."